the big British castle. It's time for Adam and Joe to broadcast on the radio. There'll be some music and some random talking in between, and then eventually the whole thing will just end.
Althea and Donna there. That's Uptown Top Ranking. Hey, this is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music on a beautiful Saturday morning. It's going to be a hot one today, listeners. I know this is your first stop for weather information, and I can tell you that it's going to be around 75 Fahrenheit today, and that's hot. So
it's going to be hot in other respects as well.
In a sexy way.
It's going to be Britain's sexiest day.
That's right.
I've just decided.
Well, we should do like a sexy Black Squadron command then, shouldn't we?
Should we?
Yeah. Well, let's have the jingle first to wake up the squadron. Here we go.
Black Squadron!
Always catch the beginning of the show. Black Squadron don't want to miss a thing. That's not the way Black Squadron rolls.
Black Squadron!
Went to bed at a reasonable hour. Gotta be sharp on Saturday morning. That's the secret of the squadron's power.
Black Squadron!
Yes, Black Squadron, of course, the elite listening force that listen to this show live between, what, 10?
10 and 10.30.
10.30. There you go. This week's command is a sartorial command.
Mm-hmm.
It requires jiggling your clothes around.
Clothes jiggling.
Clothes jiggles?
That's my favourite thing. Listen, just before you carry on, I've noticed that I've started doing a thing with my voice that I've got to stop, I've got to eliminate. You know sometimes how when you go through phases in your life of acquiring twitches and tics and quirks and quonks, and at the moment I've got a vocal quonk, and it is going like this, doing a little...
I have to break it to you. You've done that for a long time.
Really?
Yeah, you've only just become aware of it.
I've only just noticed.
Yeah, you've done that for a long time.
Christmas crackers.
We've even talked about it. I'm sure we've talked about it.
I know Jim Dean's used to do that at school.
It's like before you say something, you've had a thought.
Yeah.
And you think your thought is so delicious that you're just smacking your lips as if it's a sip of delicious wine.
That's right.
Blah, 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 blah.
That's your impression of me. Come on, I don't go...
Well, that's the subtext.
Yeah, that's the motif.
I'm only teasing. No, it's a good quote. We'll keep an eye out for that quirk.
Right,
and
then,
if we see it, do you want us to eliminate it, generally?
Yeah, that's one Pauline quirk I can live without.
Yeah, so if we hear it, we'll make you aware of it.
I'm worried now. I shouldn't have mentioned it now, because I'm going to make everyone else aware of it, and now it's going to be irritating, isn't it? So listen, let's deal with the squadron, though, okay? They are standing to attention. We're going to play some Metronomy for you very soon. This is a hot band. Their new album is being well-reviewed across the board, and we're going to play a track called The Bay as soon as Commander Cornballs issues the command.
And if you're a new squadron member, all you have to do is listen to the command, interpret it as you see fit, take a photo of yourself interpreting it, and send it to 64046 on text or via email adamandjoe.6music@bbc.co.uk. And every single picture we receive, that's a lie, isn't it? Most of the pictures we receive will go up on the BBC blog. I wonder what criteria we use to filter out photos. Are there any reasons why a photo might not appear on the on the blog? Obviously, if it's lewd...
If there's
or
excessive
unsettling
nudism or problem imagery,
problematic imagery.
Yeah, then we.
Where do those photos go?
I've got them.
I want them.
I'll show you them after.
There's an amazing coveted box of illegal Black Squadron photos.
Yeah, contraband, dirty squadron material.
Filthy squadron.
Filthy squadron. Speaking of which, let's
here
issue
we
the
go.
Command.
It's time for the command. Stand by, Black Squadron. This morning's command is cross dressing.
Oh, that's funky.
That's a fun thing to do on a bass.
Oh, that's funky. Do you like the word funky?
Do I like the word funky? I prefer it used to describe stuff that stinks.
Okay, yes.
Oh, that's funky.
As a little musky.
I think it should be taken back to its
musky.
Origins.
Yeah, David Byrne uses it in that way.
Like, does he?
Yeah, like a funky old building.
That's the way to use it, I think.
Right. And so not to... Unless you're talking about something that is actually to do with the genre, the musical genre funk.
Yeah.
But anything else, like, ooh, that's a funky shirt.
Look at your funky face.
It's, yeah, it doesn't feel right, does it?
No.
It's fallen out of currency. That was Metronomy, right?
That was Metronomy.
Yeah, with The Bay from their latest album, English Riviera. This is Adam and Joe, BBC Six Music. Black Squadron Command is active. We're already receiving some stunning and startling photographs. There's this man. I don't really know his name. I'll get to his name later. But he's probably put on, would you say that's his partner's dress? Her little summer dress.
He's put on his partner's slippy top.
And he's attempting to fabricate her bust.
By sticking a toilet roll in there.
Well, he should have, you know, what he was planning to do was take some toilet paper off and stuff it into a sort of breasticle-shaped thing. But he hasn't bothered. He's just stuffed the tube down there.
Stuffed the tube. And it's not even a full tube. It's down to the last few sheets there. Mm, so.
He's been busy. And he's got a very sort of sexy face.
He does. He's snarling away. I mean, it's a nice little peek into the guy's world, into George's world. He is in a top floor flat there. He's got some windows that are on a slant, you know, roof windows. Is that how you would describe
them? Yes, roof windows.
He's got a kick-ass poster in the background there. He's a young, sexy man. He looks a little bit like Mika.
He does, doesn't he?
You know? And he is snarling, and he's absolutely fine. Well, in one respect, he's fine with cross-dressing. In another, he's not really, because he's still got his T-shirt on. He doesn't want to betray his masculinity.
Mm. Well, he's quite hirsute.
He is hirsute, isn't he?
Keep those pictures coming in, though, Black Squadron. We will describe some of the most outrageous ones in a second, once we've had a good look at them all.
So, Joe, do you watch BBC Four a lot? Do you like to
watch?
Sure,
I do. I'm a man. I love the arts.
I love the arts.
I absolutely adore the arts.
I can't get enough arts.
Mm.
I love to be covered in them.
I love the smell of arts.
I like the taste of the arts.
Do you?
Oh, it's nice. It's delicious. What I do with the arts is sometimes I have a nibble, a little tiny nibble. Then I'm so hungry for arts. I stuff it all in my mouth. Can't get enough arts. Paintings coming out, pure paintings falling out of my mouth, and sculptures and things like that. Sculptures falling out the corner of my mouth. I love the arts, is what I mean.
Mm. We both love the arts.
We do, don't we? We're from the arts.
Why are you artsing?
Because I enjoy watching those dramas they have based on real bits of history. Like,
yes.
I like them when they get very current as well, you know, when they dramatise it.
Have they got some of those on BBC Four?
Well, man. There's something I saw recently that really surprised me because I didn't realise they'd done it. But it's the Adam and Joe story.
No, it was on BBC Four.
It was on BBC Four.
Wow, and it was one of those prestige productions recreating our...
It won a BAFTA.
Did it?
Yeah, the lead guy won a BAFTA, I think, for his portrayal of you, in fact.
No, what actors did they cast in there then?
They cast Daniel Rigby and Brian Dick.
Really?
Daniel Rigby played Joe and Brian Dick played Adam.
Mm.
And what they did was mainly based on the events leading up to us being hired to do the Six Music show.
Wow.
And the subsequent global phenomenon that it became. And the producers, I think, chose to tone down the whole middle class southern thing.
Right.
So our accents are not exactly as we speak now. But have a listen to this clip. It's remarkable how they capture the dynamic.
Wow.
What if we change the act? What if we put more of ourselves out there?
What have we been doing for the past 13 years?
We've been a double act, but we've never been us. That's what we should do. Nobody's got what we've got. And I'll tell you what, if it doesn't work out, we call it a day and no hard feelings.
So this new act, what would it be? How would it start?
You'll be short and bad-tempered.
Hmm.
And I'll be tall and lazy. But we'll both be idiots.
I mean, it's a little reductive. That was in the years before, you know, you became quite hardworking and started doing.
Wow. They've really captured the way that we and all comedians sort of have a discussion about exactly what they'll do.
Yeah.
And sort of quite a pithy discussion
and
lay it out in a couple of sentences.
That's the conversation that we had, though.
Yeah.
We thought we've got to define exactly what this dynamic is before we get into it. Otherwise, it could get a little messy.
That's amazing. What was that really? What was that really from, really?
What do you mean? Eric and Ernie.
Ah, did you watch the whole thing?
Yeah, I loved it.
Was he good?
It was great. And he deservedly won a BAFTA for that, Daniel Rigby playing... No, was it Daniel Rigby played Eric and Brian Dick played Ernie? So anyway, the tall, funny one won the BAFTA.
Weirdly, I watched one of those this week as well that I bought on DVD when I was away. It was the Falco story.
Shut up.
So they've made a feature film
about... Shut up. What? Falco?
Yeah, Falco.
As in Rock Me Amadeus?
Yeah. It's a dramatised documentary of the life of Falco, and I bought it.
How long is it? 15 minutes?
No! He was a big figure in wherever he was from, Austria.
Sorry.
He's hugely important. Yeah. It has the moment where he decides his name, mm-hmm. where he's watching TV. Falco. Yes, Falco. Falco. Yes, that's it. I will be called Falco.
So he settles on it immediately.
Immediately, yeah.
It's not like, Malco.
That's the scene. He just says it over and over again.
Yeah.
I'll bring in some clips. It's extraordinary.
Oh, I love those things.
But it makes you realise that obviously he's huge in his country. Yeah. So, for you know, the local TV station, it makes sense to make a massive thing out of him. But when you export it into other countries where maybe he's not so famous, it starts showing up the sort of cliches of those things a bit. Right. Do you know what I mean?
Of course.
Of course.
And so there must be a very long sequence about Rock Me Amadeus.
You know what? I haven't got to that bit yet.
That's the best bit. I can't wait to hear how that goes. Let's have some music right now. This is your first free choice today, Joe.
Yeah, this is Lee Fields and the Expressions. Now, Lee Fields has got some concerns about the world, and he's very angry about certain things, certain issues. So what he's going to do is he's going to sing about them and almost shout about them in a very soulful voice.
Is he a modern man?
He's a modern man, yeah, modernish. But he's going to do it over an extraordinarily, I can't use the word funky anymore, can I?
Sorry,
mate. A very soulful groove.
You were the one that rained on that parade. Yeah.
So here we go. Here's a bit of political shouting and a pretty great bass line.
Come on. New sounds there, Peter, Bjorn and John with Young Folks. I think it would be nice if they used that on some kind of advertisement.
Maybe if they're lucky one day.
You never know. That's Young Folks. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. Nice to be with you, listeners. This beautiful Saturday morning. Hope it's nice where you are.
And what a beautiful collection of photos we've had sent by the Black Squadron, Britain's most elite listening force, who have embraced this morning's command of cross-dressing with verve and vigour.
Do you think any of the squadron thought it was beyond the pale, too much to ask?
Well, some members of the squadron have tried to be clever.
Right.
They've put angry faces on bottles of dressing, salad dressing.
Good one. Yeah. Cross-dressing.
Rachel and Tim, for instance, were one of the first to do that. Jamie in London has a bottle of vinaigrette with a gur, spell that in fridge magnet letters.
Very nice.
But many of them have gone for the real thing. For instance, Stephen in Southampton.
He's a manly man, and wearing a little slip pinny.
He's hirsute as well.
He certainly is.
And he's wearing a lovely little flouncy summer dress.
And he's doing an face.
Because a little gust of wind is threatening to blow it up and reveal his undercarriage. Well done, Stephen. He's wearing his specs as well. He's a very dainty lady. This is a good one I've got up here on my telly screen. And it is from Jason Kilner. And he and a lady, maybe his lady partner, I think it's safe to assume, they've done the full thing, haven't they? They've totally swapped. He is dressed in a lovely, frilly, pink, satiny bridesmaid's dress, looks like.
Yeah, or a ball gown or
something. He's even got a tiara.
And again, he is kind of a big, chunky, manly man.
Hey, steady on.
I'm not saying he's lardy.
He's got a good figure, a very good figure, but... certainly in the breasticle area, something's going on there, unless he's padded himself. And then his lady partner is dressed as a sort of American football player type.
No, she's a workman. She's got her protective work gear on.
That's right. I thought that was an American football visor. Yeah so she's like a welder or something out of Flashdance.
Yeah, and she's got her protective welding trousers on there and a big butch belt on.
What I like about this photo is it's very formal. They've gone into the garden to take it. They're standing shoulder to shoulder with quite straight faces, aren't they? And it's a good wide shot. You can see everything in the garden.
And they have defined the respective roles of male and female.
They have.
The role of the female is to be beautiful and to flounce in France. And the role of the man is to build and weld.
Flounce around balls. Yeah, that's true, though. Here's another one.
They look
from
like
David
and
Sophie in Bristol. This is quite badly printed, so I can't quite tell what's going on. But David has, again, a very beautiful little cocktail dress on, hasn't he?
Yes, he does. Much too small for him.
And Sophie, I don't know, Sophie looks like she's dressed like Kevin out of Kevin and Perry.
He's got nice long legs, David. Look at your nice legs. You should consider wearing more little dresses.
I mean, lots of terrific photos. Paul and Katie. Paul has put on one of Katie's bras.
He's either trying to get into it or get out of it. He's having some trouble.
He looks very happy.
From behind.
And Robbie and James have done a very good job as well. Robbie there. What do you call that sort of a dress there?
It's got a kind of busty, what's the word? Core City type situation?
Yeah, unfortunately, Robbie's right nipple is popping out, which is a shame.
It's peeking out over the top there.
But there we are. So congratulations, Black Squadron. And if you want to see some very challenging photos, do check out the Adam and Joe blog later in the day, where we'll put up everything that's put upable. bbc.co.uk/blogs/Adam and Joe. Is there time to stand down the squadron?
Let's do it now before the news.
Black Squadron!
Stand down, your work is done. You've earned yourself a nice warm bath and maybe a nice little bun.
Black Squadron!
But now it's 10:31 and it's time for the news. Very nice indeed. That's Supergrass with Caught by the Fuzz. Hey, how you doing, listeners? Adam and Joe here. And I think it's time we edged towards Retro Text the Nation, talking about last week's Text the Nation subject, which, of course, was time murder. But before that, we have a new jingle. And this was sent in to us by a mailman from Glasgow. Incidentally, quite a few messages this week from people saying, why do so many postmen listen to your show? And why do you call them mailmen like Americans? Now, we mean like they're of the male gender. This is from John T, and he says, Dear Adamski and Joe Bananas, observing listeners submitting versions of your masterful jingles, I decided to follow suit and brain flashed upon reworking the Retro Text the Nation in the style of my favourite Falkirkian miserabilist's Arab Strap. So I got my mate Dave to record it with mics and plugs and knobs and drums. This is a slightly... he sent us in like a version of Text the Nation that was... excuse me.
You're right.
Yeah, fine.
Text the Nation.
Text the Nation.
What did he call us? At the top of that email?
Adamski and Joe Bananas.
Joe Bananas is a new one.
Do you like that?
I like it.
Adamski's been used before. Yeah, Adamski's
old school. Joe Bananas is good. That's something else people are doing.
Giving us names.
Yeah.
I like it.
I like it too.
Most of them are pretty good. So this is very good. This is the less Arab strappy of the two jingles that he sent us, but it is extremely Glaswegian. Check this out.
Used to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel acute frustration, cause I couldn't join in with Text the Nation. But now my troubles have disappeared, because Retro Text the Nation's here. And now my letter might be read out instead of chalked in the bin and forgotten about.
It's quite heightening, isn't it, to hear someone who can do that voice as well as we can. Wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It's great to hear someone doing like a proper Scottish accent for a change, rather than the rubbish you hear from
a lot of these softer...
Oh, your tarties are on fire!
you describe that as Glaswegian. Are you confident about that?
He says he's mailman from Glasgow.
Okay, good. You've got the facts to back up your opinions.
Is he sounding like a Ned? I don't know.
That's a non-educated delinquent, that stands for, doesn't it?
I didn't know.
Peter Mullen's film. Supposed to be very good. I haven't seen it. Neds.
I didn't know that it was an acronym, Neds. Anyway, you could tell us maybe if you know what exactly, if that sounded like a Ned or not.
But that's beautiful. I don't know that sounded like a Ned at all. It sounded like a very articulate man with a very beautiful accent.
Quite right.
Very well.
Quite right.
Fantastic.
I'd buy an album by John T.
He's brilliant, John T.
He's very good.
He's a clever man.
So, time murder. Thank you so much for your messages on this subject. And we were talking about ways that you absolutely indefensibly waste your time last week. Have you got any there, Joe?
Sure. This is one from Gibbo in Fleet. Dear Jay Corn and Uncle Buck, when I'm bored, I sometimes close my eyes and rub my eyelids to induce a kaleidoscopic light show. I experiment with different pressures and movements to create exciting effects and patterns. You may think it sounds a bit loopy, but it's a safe, legal alternative to other psychedelic options and certainly could have saved the Beatles a lot of unnecessariness. Oh, sorry, that's from Righty
that's
in
Righty.
London. Gibbo's the next one. Yeah, Righty in London. Well, what do you make of that?
He's talking about entoptics.
Yes, we've discussed these before.
Phenomenon, isn't it?
This is the kind of paisley, psychedelic paisley design that
checkerboard I get.
I get paisley.
Do you?
Yeah, my inside of my eyeballs are very Laura Ashley.
Oh, mine are very much like a kind of psychedelic chessboard.
Really? What's the difference between us? And that's why we'll never get on. you have to be careful, though. Be careful with pressing your eyes. They're very valuable eggs.
You shouldn't press them so hard that they pop into your skull and then come out of your mouth.
No. Be very gentle. You've only got one pair of eyes. Did you know the human eyes? Is this true they stay the same size from when you're born? They're the only thing... Is that true?
It is true, I think.
Is that true?
I was chuckling because I used to think that it was the head.
That stayed the same size.
Yeah. You know, like you have arguments. One of my arguments was about whether Concorde went supersonic or at the speed of light.
We discussed that.
And my other argument, which I got very heated, I said that it went at the speed of light, incidentally, listeners. And I was quite old at the time. And one of my other arguments was, did you know that the human head remains the same size from birth until death? Interesting fun fact.
Another one. Have you got one?
Here we go. This is from... now, I've got to say this right. It's Gerard with a soft G, not a hard G. I hate it when people say it like that, says Gerard. He says, Dear His Royal Buckness and El Cornerino, my girlfriend Hannah, who I call Moomin because she's like a beautiful Moomin, had an important work deadline one evening. I left her to get on with it in our flat, and when I returned later that night, I found her asleep. I turned on the laptop and saw there was a lot of browser tabs still open on her search, software that stemmed from two original sets of search results. One was the search term psychological theories of procrastination, and the other had results for health benefits of drinking champagne. Ta-ta from Gerard.
Wow, I'm going to search that.
That's good, isn't it? Just think, now, listen, I'm procrastinating. I better make something out of this and find out about the philosophy behind the whole practice. And while I'm doing that, I'm going to have a glass of champagne.
And find out about the philosophy behind that.
To celebrate.
Finally, here's one from Naomi. I say finally. Kind of made an executive decision there. She says, Dear Adam and Joe, I spend a lot of my time spending time in the following ways. I like to select areas on my computer desktop by using my mouse and making squares or rectangles. Brackets, they show in a pale blue colour, usually, and disappear almost the moment you unclick the mouse. This is a good way to look busy at work, and it's fun to do it faster and faster. I also do it at home. Now, I do that.
Yeah.
And it is fun, isn't it?
Sure it is. Very satisfying.
The squares appear. Nice. And the squares are slightly different colours.
Disappear. This is a little bit like the Adam Curtis film on at the moment.
Oh.
All watched over by machines.
Benevolent machines or something.
Lovely Grace or something. Mm-hmm. All about how the computer dream has turned out to be slightly less than we hoped it might be.
There's a second part to Naomi's email. She says, I also sometimes read a pretend magazine in my head. The pages are often formatted in the style of a page that you might find in a typical women's magazine, and the words somehow appear ready for me to read. It's not about writing or thinking about ideas for articles. It's simply reading the words that are there, perhaps about the latest clothing craze, or an interview with David Attenborough or somebody.
Unlikely to be an interview with David Attenborough.
An imaginary magazine that she doesn't actually have to think of. It just appears in her head and she reads it.
Yeah.
Now, she may be a genius and she should work in mags.
She should make a mag.
That would be a
good lady mag, you know, with...
It would be called Naomi.
Sure. Exclamation mark.
Yeah.
And now, you mentioned Gibbo earlier on, so we've got to read Gibbo's one.
Gibbo.
He's in Fleet. He says, to kill time whilst bored, I look up old soap characters on Wikipedia and read their backstories and then follow the link to another character that they may have been married to or had an affair with, etc. I can waste hours flicking from character to character, reading all these stories, even though I can remember most of them anyway. Afterwards, I feel like I'm literally wasting my youth.
Well, you are.
Literally are, Gibbo.
Wow. I didn't think there was anything more vapid than watching soap operas, but I'm wrong.
So thank you very much for all your messages there. We'll have some Text the Nation later in the show. But right now, here's Tune Yards. I played a bit of Tune Yards the other day. I've been very much enjoying her album.
Tune Yards?
Yeah, this is business.
Don't take my life away, don't take my life away.
Eyeballs. According to general ophthalmology, brackets Vaughan, Aysbury and Reardon, Eva, Appleton and Lange, Stamford, 1999, quote, the size of the eyeball at birth averages 16.5 millimetres in diameter, front to back measurement. In adults, the diameter is 24.2 millimetres. The maximum eye size is reached when a person is 7 to 8 years old. So the eye grows 50% in diameter and to something over double its birth weight, plus 115%.
But the head remains the same size.
The head remains exactly the same size, which is amazing.
Which is incredible. That's why it's very difficult for a lady to give birth.
Wouldn't that be it would be good if that was true, though, the eyeball thing, don't you think?
So what is it that remains the same
nothing,
size?
Nothing. I mean, it's all just chaotic.
Winky?
But,
Nothing.
You know, facts like that should be true, like that dogs can't look up.
Yeah.
You want them to be true. Why can't they be true? Are there any of those things that are true? Are they all just rubbish?
You know who would know?
Who would know?
Stephen Fry.
He would know, wouldn't he? Yeah. He knows everything.
If we had him on the line, we could ask him. Now, I saw a wonderful documentary the other day that came out in 2007. And you remember how much I love the arts?
Yes, I do. You were talking about it earlier.
Absolutely love arts. And if there's one thing I love more than the arts, it's rock and roll.
Right.
And when the two come together, life doesn't get any better for Buckles.
You're cool.
Yeah.
You're so cool.
A culture show special from 2007, this was, with Lou Reed talking to Six Music's very own lovely Lauren Laverne about why he was recreating his album Berlin from 1973 for a series of live shows. Mm. And it was a really great program, 1 hour with sort of overviews of Reed's career intertwined with performances from Berlin and putting the album in context. And then a very disarming series of encounters between Lou and Lauren herself. Now, Lou Reed is notoriously ornery, if that's the word, and difficult with interviewers and journalists and that kind of thing. I'll play you a clip right now of Lou conducting another interview with a young TV journalist from a Swedish culture program. This is on YouTube. You can find it. Towards the end of the interview, this journalist, who's like a young guy and clearly quite in awe of Lou Reed and doing his best and having quite a hard time with Lou Reed in this hotel room or whatever. The journalist asks cautiously if Lou has any prejudices of any kind, and this is his answer.
Do you have any prejudice?
Me? Oh, I don't like journalists.
Journalists?
Oh, I despise them.
Why?
They're disgusting. Mainly the English. They're pigs.
Yeah.
What nationality was that journalist?
He was Swedish.
That's okay.
So at the end, he's like, yeah, that's a good point. They are pigs, aren't they?
Yeah. So that's your classic standard Lou Reed for a lot of journalists. So Lauren Laverne makes this point at the beginning of the documentary and says that she was a little bit trepidatious.
Mm.
But Lou likes Lauren. Mm-hmm. He thinks she's absolutely great. And he melts in front of her and is just the model of smiley charm right the way through this interview. He loves all her questions. Everything is just dandy as far as he's concerned with Lauren Laverne. Here's a clip right now of the two of them watching some footage of Lou in the 60s when his hair was big and shaggy, and the sexy chemistry really begins to bubble here. Have a listen.
Look at my haircut. An afro.
I thought it looked pretty good.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, so they're getting on well. Nice little compliment from Lauren there. And Lou Reed really likes it. You know, that's very nice. Then Lauren asks Lou if he was bothered by the very harsh critical reception that met the release of the album Berlin in 73. So Lou brushes away this suggestion as if to say, oh, come on, Lauren. I don't know what you've heard, but I'm, you know, I don't want it to stand in the way of us enjoying some very sexy time together, my whole relationship with journalists. Let's have a listen.
Because the reviews were really, really harsh. And, I mean, did that affect you? I know that you don't care for the opinion of journalists too much, but...
Well, believe it or not, there's some journalists that I'm quite attached to.
Really?
Yes.
Yes. And one of them sitting right in front of me, and she's got blonde hair and she's got Lauren.
Here's another clip right now. It's time to actually ask her out, I think, on the program. Lou can't wait until after the interview is over to ask Lauren out. So he decides more or less to do it on the show while they're
recording.
What
are the relative ages here?
So Lou is, well, Lauren, how old is she? She's 31 or something, early 30s. Lou is 100, I think. No, Lou must be in his early 60s by now, I would say, or maybe mid-60s.
Highly compatible.
I mean, Bowie is mid-60s now, I think, isn't he? So Lou's got to be around that mark. Pretty well preserved in his craggly way and looking quite cool in this interview. But anyway, here's Lou more or less asking Lauren out.
How have you changed since the release of the record first time around to kind of...
How have I changed?
Yeah, have you changed?
Are you kidding?
Know?
In that amount of time, how have I changed? In so many ways, we'd probably have to sit down, have many, many drinks to enumerate how I've changed in that amount of time.
So let's go on. Let's go and have them
enumerate.
Interview. I mean, you hear how soft his voice is. Like, normally he's so taciturn and gruff. You get, like, monosyllabic answers out of him generally, or, you know.
What happened next, do you think?
Well, they have to wrap the interview up, finally. I mean, it's a
heartbreaking.
It's a shame. And here is how the interview is concluded, leaving no one in any doubt as to where Lou wishes the relationship was going.
Well, Lou, thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, for me too.
Good luck with your gigs. Thank you.
I guess you'll be one of the London journalists that I'm really in love with.
Thank you, Lou.
Sure.
And then, wow. Have you talked to Lauren about
no.
this?
No. And by this time, Lauren is sort of thinking, maybe I will have a little slice of Lou. Even though she's happily married.
Sexy tortoise action.
With a child. Yeah, exactly. She's sort of thinking, wow, flipping it. Is that your Lou?
Yeah. That's him going in for a kiss.
I thought that was the way Bob Dylan sounded when he went in for a kiss with Alicia Keys.
Yeah, that's the same.
The sexy old
the
rock.
Same, the sexy old
the
tortoise.
Rock tortoise.
You know the way they pull little bits of lettuce into their mouth, like a centimetre at a time on the tongue, and take a that's what will be going on there. Lauren Lettuce Laverne. Being chomped up.
I got a bit of your blonde hair there.
Wow. There's so much to talk about there.
there's a lot of sexy flirty interviews online with people. There's one with Frank Zappa where he's unusually
the relationship between the relationship between journalists and artists is weird, isn't it? And critics and artists is weird. It's like journalists are constantly trying to get a rise out of the performer by writing really provocative stuff. Uh-huh. And then other journalists are going, did that get you? Did we get to you? You know, even years later.
Yeah.
Did particular articles get under their skin?
Yes,
it's
that's
just
right.
Like sort of bear baiting. It's weird.
Of course, it's a dance.
It's a dance. And every
now and again, it's Torvald and Dean.
Do you ever imagine yourself when you're very, very, when you're older, when you're like in your 60s, 70s, and how you will dress to look like a sexy, sexy old man?
If I can't handle it at this point, how am I going to be? I'm just going to be like a full-on tramp at that point, aren't I? Mm.
Some women find that attractive.
Yeah, let's hope so. Okay, there you go. So I thought I'd play a bit of Velvet Underground. Now, this was a track that Lou Reed wrote, but Mo Tucker sang. And I actually sang this to my wife when we got married 10 years ago, it was. But then, like a few months later, it turned up on a commercial, like a Hyundai advert. And then I thought, oh, no, everyone thinks that I just nicked it off the Hyundai. Then it was on Morven Caller on the soundtrack in 2002. And then it was on the film Savages and Juno in 2007. Anyway, it's still a good track. This is I'm Sticking With You.
That's Fleet Foxes with Lorelei. This is Adam and Joe on Six Music. Fleet Foxes, of course, are in town.
Lorelei.
They were playing at the Hameo. Is that what it's still called?
I didn't know it was called the Hameo.
Yeah. Earlier this week. And my lady partner girlfriend was there.
Mm-hmm.
And she reported back an extraordinary occurrence.
What happened?
Do you remember the sort of catchphrase stroke meme this program used to have?
Stephen,
yes. There was a lot of that going on. Would you say last year or the year before? When did it peak?
Stephen Hitch peaked 2 years ago.
2 years ago?
Yeah.
Oh, it's yesterday's news.
Yeah.
But not according to Mr. Pecknold, the lead singer of the Fleet Foxes.
Right.
He missed it at the concerts. There was no Stevening at the Fleet Foxes concerts this year. And of course, Fleet Foxes were victims. Is that the right word to use of Stevening quite heavily?
There was a lot of Stevenage at their last series of shows a couple of years ago. For some reason,
out of all bands, they seem to get a lot of Stevening a couple of years ago.
Because they've got sensitive, intelligent listeners.
They do. But this year, at their concerts at the Hameo, there was no Stevenage.
No.
And lead singer Mr. Pecknold pointed this out. And here's an email that comes from Lucy Beavor, Bwvor. She says, "So we were at the Fleet Foxes' rather marvellous gig at the Hammersmith Apollo last night. Everyone was having a wonderful time, lots of cheering and whooping at the sight and sound of the lovely Mountain Men. Suddenly, Pecknold takes to the mic in between songs and says in a curious tone, 'So, like, What happened to the Stephen thing? Was that just a fad? Q gasps of breath and literally tens of shouts of Stephen! And of course the appropriate response of just coming! This went on for a good minute before Mr. Pecknold sidled back up to the mic and sheepishly apologised for opening a great big nest of eggs.
Egg nest. Wow.
I thought I would send this in, as not only has there been a distinct lack of Stevenage on this run of the show, but I was one of the squadron members who alerted you to the Stevenage being whipped up at the Fleet Foxes UK gigs a couple of years back. Thus, I now feel it is my very special duty to report back on such important events.
Well done, Lucy. Thank you, Lucy. You're going to get a medal for that. Here we go. I'm pinning it on your chest. Look at that. It looks nice there. Sorry, I just touched. Okay.
So that's exciting news, isn't it?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Mr. Pecknold, he missed the Stevenage.
Pecknold, he asked. He was Stephen baiting.
He's begging for it. He associates it with his visits to England.
Yeah.
It's a peculiarly British pastime that's not just a fad. It's something he expects to hear every time he comes to this country.
It's as British as tea, crumpets, croquet on the lawn and hoodies.
Yes. I went to see the Fleet Foxes performing in the BBC, what's it called, musical radio theatre?
Canteen.
Yeah, last night. They were recording a concert for Radio 2, which is going to be on this Thursday from 8 p.m. with Joe Wiley, and it was beautiful.
No Stevenage there, though.
No Stevenage there. It was a very respectful atmosphere. They were wonderful. Mm. There were different sorts of people in the crowd. Mm-hmm. It's quite a Radio 2 crowd.
A lot of mountain men.
Well, there were different levels of enthusiasm, and I don't know whether you've experienced this at a sit-down gig in particular. I mean, you can be more free and easy if you're at a standing gig.
Sure.
You know, you can clap, whoop, holler. This was more of a sort of a concert hall environment. It was more sedate.
People shuffling papers and...
Well, most of the audience wanted to sit and lightly sway in their chairs, yeah, and enjoy the music. There was one man who that wasn't good enough. He had to stand up and clap very, very loudly. Woo! Through all the songs on his own. He was the only one standing.
Yeah.
But he made a big thing of it through the whole concert, swaying his arms, shouting and clapping. And then there were another two people that were so excited by him.
Yeah.
And the fact that, look at him, he's really enjoying this concert.
He's starting a thing.
He doesn't care about these stick-in-the-muds. He's right. Everyone else is wrong. And I could see, because I was sitting on the balcony above, I was watching, I could see this woman really trying to get into it in her seat, really wanting to stand up. But her boyfriend was looking a little bit nervous and sort of trying to calm her down. But she said, no, look at him over there, the big man swaying. I want to be like him. And she was starting to disturb everybody around her. So there were lots of different energies in the room and no one quite knew how to deal with it, because it's exciting music. Mm. Everyone liked to clap.
Like around their campfire.
Yeah. They liked to clap, and you could see that. I don't know how bands feel about clapping, especially English clapping, because it went a bit out of sync every now and then.
It always does, though, doesn't it?
It always does.
It starts off with the best intentions.
And your heart sinks a bit at the beginning of the song when the audience start doing that.
Yeah, you think.
And then the clappers themselves realise, oh, we're out of sync.
We're totally out of time.
We better stop.
I mean, that must be tricky. Down. That's the test of a real musician, though, isn't it? If you can, because the other thing is that they're hearing it all through their monitors and everything.
Well, you can see that they're all craning a bit. That they're all like tilting their necks to listen to the actual drummer rather, yeah, than the audience, so they don't get sort of pulled off the beat. But it was a fantastic gig, and it was a great audience, and it was really good. So do check it out if you're a Fleet Foxes fan. 8 p.m. this Thursday on Radio 2.
Was there anyone panning for gold?
There wasn't. No goats. It's a great shame.
Panning for gold, I said, not
goats.
Yeah,
no, but they have goats while they, you can't just, because there's not enough gold comes up, you have to look after goats.
You have to start panning for goats.
Yeah, I always expect the Fleet Foxes to bring their goats, but they didn't. They must have been backstage.
How very rude. Maybe they couldn't get them through customs. Here's Blur. This is song two. Oh, yeah. Always remember my dad getting upset with that song because of the lyrics. Do you remember that?
I do.
Why would you... He was angry about the fact that Damon Albarn had put himself in the
path of a jumbo jet to get his hair cut.
Exactly. He just thought it was
irresponsible.
Totally irresponsible and a stupid thing. It really annoyed him. He just thought, well, you know, if that's what you're going to do, then I've got no sympathy for you.
Yeah, but setting a bad example.
Setting a bad example is dangerous. It's not
encouraging young people to get their hair cut via a low-flying aircraft.
Exactly. It's not
very dangerous.
Bad enough that you've got a stupid haircut. You have to do it by putting yourself and everyone on the plane in danger.
Shall we do some pop-propriation?
Let's have the jingle. Crank it up, James!
I like to change the lyrics of songs from time to time.
Lock the taskbar.
To make them refer to things I do.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
I call it pop-propriation, and as far as I'm aware, it isn't a crime. I wonder if it's something you do too.
Yes it is, yes it is, yes it is.
It's more laid back than a lot of my jingles.
I like it.
Pop appropriation.
It's funky.
Let's fire things off this week with an anonymous one.
Ooh.
And this is from a lady who says, when me and my partner find ourselves lying back to back in bed with our cheeks touching, we sing, lady in bed is sleeping with me, cheek to cheek.
That's sexy.
It is sexy.
Is it a typo? She actually, instead of writing bed, she writes bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lying back to back in bad.
That's quite exciting. Let's go to bad.
She's feeling guilty. You got one there?
I have got one here. Hello, Buxosaurus and Cornodactyl.
Oof,
crikey.
Ooh, that's the, yeah.
Here we go. The other night, I asked my wife, Shan, if she was running a bath for herself. And she said, no, it's for the cats. So I began to sing Sarcastic Woman to her to the tune of More Than a Woman, i.e. Sarcastic Woman to me. Do, 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 do. That's quite a useful phrase. Annoyingly, I've forgotten to put the person's name there. So, well, the husband of Shan. Thank you for sending
that. Is that S-I-A-N?
Yeah. I was saying it wrong.
Shan.
I say it Shan. Like, yeah, I'm trying to make life interesting.
French for dog, isn't it? We've got to deal with pronunciation later on in the show, actually.
No need to say it's the French for dog.
Yeah, but chien is the French
chien.
For dog.
Chien.
Yeah, the French for dog. Here's one right now from Sam Hume. He's a mailman, not a female woman. He says, dear Buxtables and Cornucopia, the other day you were talking about song parodies people can't help but sing in everyday life. Or versions of songs. Whenever it's cold, I simply have to sing to the tune of Elton John's Your Song. It's a little bit chilly, this feeling inside. I feel like my nutties have just shriveled up and died. Don't have much money, but boy, if I did, I'd buy thermal undies where my nutties could live. I hope you don't mind, I hope you don't mind how small my nutties have got. But when it gets very cold, it tends to happen a lot.
That's a whole flipping song he's written.
He's got it all in his head there.
Wow.
It's a little bit chilly. That's a useful one as well.
Very useful, very detailed.
When it's brass monkeys out there.
Here's one from Mike Shinks, who has a wife called Fran. Mike says, hello, boys. Whenever my wife is bemoaning the fact that I don't quite live up to her expectations, I like to sing to the theme from the Gillette advert, Mike Shinks, the best that Fran could get. Even though she gives me a look of despair and pity, I know that deep inside she thinks I'm very funny and that I am indeed well worth having. Mike Shinks, the best that Fran can get.
Doesn't even rhyme with Gillette. This is from Ross of the Canes. He says, dear A and J, keeping it simple, after receiving an incorrect delivery from my local curry house, I immediately got on the phone to correct the issue. My girlfriend felt like I should just accept the order, and suddenly I found myself shouting, you gotta fight for the right chapati!
Nice.
She groaned. I thought it was genius. It is, Ross.
Here's one last one from Neil, who's a male man. My teenage sons Jake and Oliver came up with this as a way of dealing with their anger at being asked to do the job of recycling in the house. They were so annoyed at the amount of bottles following a recent celebration that they jointly expressed their disgust in the tune of Tiny Temper's Pass Out. We take the bins out, we take the food out, we take the plastic and the cardboard and the tins out. Do you know that one?
No, I'm glad you...
We take the bins out, we take the food out, we take the plastic and the cardboard and the tins out. That's my favourite bit.
That's Temper on his own without Dappy, is it?
That's him doing it a cappella.
Yeah. You know he's teamed up with Dappy now.
I do. They've done a single. I haven't heard it. I've only seen the posters.
All right, here's one more from me. This is from Ed in London. I once saw my sister looking very interestedly at something in a shop window. Not being able to see what was so interesting, I sang to the tune of Tom Jones's What's New Pussycat, What You Looking At? What? I think it may have been a bit too loud, as some people turned around and seemed to interpret this as aggressive behaviour. Love you, bye. I mean, it could be a good one for Friday night out, just to jazz things up. Actually take the aggression out of some of those Saturday night situations. What you looking at? What are you looking at, you big pants? Are you a man who wants to have a great big fight? Well, you might if you don't stop looking at what you looking at. Whoa!
That's good.
Yeah,
I think it would take the aggression out of lots of fights.
Got the same birthday as Tom Jones.
Do you? You're very similar men.
Yeah, me, Tom Jones and Prontz.
Really?
Sure.
Very, very masculine men. Macho men.
Three masculine macho musical geniuses born on the same day.
I've got the same birthday as Uri Geller.
Have you really?
Yes.
Wow.
Which means...
You're a couple of benders. Spoon benders, I mean. What? From there.
Here's some Arctic Monkeys. This is Reckless Serenade.
Go on then, say the thing I did wrong.
Hang on, I've lost it. You said it was Tiny Temper doing the duet with Dappy from N-Dubs. It's not. It's Tinchy Strider.
Tinchy Strider.
Thank you, Boris, a mailman from Sheffield.
Thank you very much. Arctic Monkeys there with Reckless Serenade. Arctic Monkeys are one of the bands that Bob Dylan plays on his Theme Time Radio Hour. One of the more modern bands, because generally Bobbles tends to focus on the albums that he loved as a youth or a younger man, at least. A lot of vintage R&B and blues and jazz and country and western. Have you ever listened to Theme Time Radio Hour?
No, I'm ashamed to say. What is this? What's happening in the world of Bob Dylan? Why is he all over all the...
Birthday.
Oh, it's his birthday.
70th birthday 2 weeks ago.
And one of the magazines has done a series of covers with him at different ages.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen those?
No.
They've done him when he was a youngster, a boy. Then they've done him when he was a middle-aged man.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've done him now that he's a funky turtle. And I mean a funky turtle in the old sense of the word. Funky, even though he probably smells lovely. He's got very good standards of personal hygiene, Bob Dylan.
I don't see him as a man that sweats very much.
Which issue would you like out of those three?
Funky Turtle.
The Funky Turtle. Yeah. Do you think that's the biggest selling one?
I would say, because he is a man that has been, in my eyes at least, completely reborn as a creative force, thanks to this radio show that he does.
Yes.
Because for me, he followed the same trajectory as a lot of my favourite artists and a lot of great artists in general. You know, he's at his peak in the early 70s, maybe, and then things start to go downhill. And then the 80s comes and it's devastating for him, as it was for Bowie.
Just like N-Dubs. I'm thinking N-Dubs.
Right.
But keep talking.
You know, things get overproduced and the voice starts to go. And suddenly you get the kind of modern Bob Dylan voice.
Yeah. Then Talisa goes on X Factor. And band starts splitting, drifting apart.
All that. And, you know, it's just not as good as your classic Blood on the Tracks Bob Dylan and stuff. I mean, there's still lots of good stuff there. And I listened to a wonderful documentary that was on recently. I think it was on Radio 2, and they also played it here on Six Music with Chris Christopherson narrating the story of Bob Dylan. Brilliant stuff. And Christopherson is saying, oh, he's still, you know, churning out the great tunes, even in his dotage. Well, they weren't, you know, they're never as good as like the real Peaches. But then he does this radio show, right, that he started to do in 2006. And they're a series of one-hour shows. This is if you don't already know about them, that went out on satellite radio first, I think an American satellite station. And then the BBC bought them and they went out on Radio 2 and Six Music. There's 100 of them.
Wow.
And they're really good, but they're quite tightly scripted. So Bob doesn't really ramble, but he does these very charming introductions to a lot of these songs and contextualizes them. And of course, they're all themed. They're all around quite good inventive themes. Like one week it'll be shoes or whatever. And sometimes it's locks and keys.
I hear it's mostly shoes.
Beginnings and endings or, you know, lettuce, that kind of
lettuce.
Thing.
Shoes, but sources of milk. He does a lot of saucer of milk. And just a lot of shows just about getting across the garden.
Comfy socks.
I'm halfway across the garden.
It's very disrespectful.
I get closer to that leaf.
Is that a good Bob Dylan impression at all?
No.
Sometimes he gets sidetracked by dandelions. That's why he's late for meetings.
His radio persona is kind of like a sort of Dick Chandler-esque, investigative journalist. Sometimes, you know, sometimes the way that
sounding a bit Pacino,
a little bit the way that Chris Rock
is sometimes quite staccato with his delivery. Mm. Well, Bob Dylan sometimes does a little bit of the same kind of delivery as Chris Rock. Anyway, he does all this and it's all tightly scripted. But every now and again, they do these weird things, like sometimes they'll have phone-ins, but it'll be clearly a bit of a scripted phone-in. Mm. Or you can't quite tell. You can't tell if there's someone really on the end of the line there.
You can't take a risk with Dylan, though, can you? You can't just have a random person on the phone.
I don't think so.
It's got to be vetted.
Yeah. But and so sometimes you have the strangest conversations popping up with Bobo on the line there. I thought I'd play a little bit of Bob Dylan and dedicate it to my mummy, who absolutely loves Bobo and loves this song that I'm going to play shortly, in particular, Lay Lady Lay. It's also one of Liam Gallagher's favourite Bob Dylan songs. He was in the papers the other day slagging off Dylan and saying, he's a miserable C-word. But the only song that he would agree that was brilliant was Lay Lady Lay, so I'm going to play that shortly. But first, here's a very surprising phone call from one of the Theme Time Radio Hour shows. Check this out.
Why don't we go to the phones right now? I think I'll check line one. Caller, you're on the air.
I love you, Bob. I'm going to bite your legs. I love you.
Well, that's not working. Line two is always good.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here.
Rock and roll. I see line four is ringing. Hello, caller. You're on the air. What's your name and where you're calling from?
Hello, Chuckle. Laura, Laura, blind a day to Bob. It's the Queen of Lully Beef.
Oh, great.
I'm calling from the Queen House.
Huh. What's your question?
Right, Chuck. Well, Lully Couple, if you was in a band, what kind of band were your boy in?
Bananarama.
Well, of course, everybody says Bananarama, don't they, Chocolully Couple? But I didn't think you were Bubbles. I thought you would be a little bit any different.
Who, by the way, was the uncle of Billy Pumpkins?
I don't think so, actually, Bubbles. I think you're thinking of Terry Turnip, Zalara.
Well, we're very sorry for the error. We'll correct it in all future broadcasts.
Aw, thanks, Laura, Laura, Chocolully Couple. Nice, baby.
We'll see you soon.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, I mean, that's Bobo after his motorcycle accident that very much changed the timbre, the sound of his voice there, I would say. But what a lovely song. That's Lay Lady Lay. Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. Very nice to be with you this Saturday morning, listeners. Here's a short message right now from AJ. He puts AJ, male and gay, Llandudno, North Wales. Very nice to hear from you, AJ. He says, hi, Adam and Joe. I was listening to your podcast and your upturned plug singing. We were talking about upturned plugs and for pop appropriation. Upturned plug. I've been standing on an upturned plug. He says, it reminded me of when I was 13. I went into the hallway to see the Hoover was out with the plug on the floor, prongs pointing up. I remember thinking someone could stand on that before I continued on my merry journey up the stairs. Later on, came back down the stairs and being young and full of energy, decided to do the age-old trick of jumping from the third step to the bottom. I'd forgotten about the plug and I landed on it. The plug lodged itself nicely into my foot. After the X-ray, it turned out I had chipped a bone. I was on crutches for a few weeks. 17 years on, I still have small scars on my foot. Bad one.
Bad one. I would have kept the holes and that could have been like a novelty fun thing.
To plug things into?
Yeah, you got a plug in the bottom of your foot.
Foot plug.
Imagine the ladies that would be attracted by such a thing. Ladies, what is this voice? Ladies love appliances. Large, meaty, let's move on.
Do you mind if I plug my fridge into your foot? It's 11:30 here on BBC Six Music. Time for the news. Flippin' Neck Tucker. I remember when that came out.
Still sounds so good.
Sounds amazing. Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five and the Message. And I was aware of it in the early 80s, I guess, in the charts.
I was aware of it in the 40s.
Were you?
Because I'm that far ahead the ball.
Way ahead when you're in your bomber there.
And the curve.
Yeah. Do you like to push envelopes too?
No.
Oh dear, what have you got against envelopes?
Hate them.
Hate the envelopes. But when that came out, they used to play sometimes the 11-minute version or whatever it is.
Mm.
And I wrote down all the words on several sheets of paper as a young, 10-year-old or whatever I was. And then I learnt them and I got loads of the words wrong, they were all misheard and everything. Mid-range migraine, cancered membrane, what was it? Broke my sacrophiliac, what's that?
Don't know.
Anyway, I learned it all. It was good.
But well done. Right.
Thanks very much. It's a good story, though, isn't it?
It's a very, very good story. Let's have another one.
Let's have another one.
It's time for Text the Nation. This is the part of the programme where we tell you a thing, what happened, and give you a sort of a subject, and you have to text us in your response to that subject. Isn't that right?
That's pretty much, I would say, right.
Have we got a jingle for this segment?
Yeah, here's what it sounds like.
Text the Nation. Text, text, text. Text the Nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the Nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
And this week, I wanted to talk about something that happened to me a week or so back at the hardware store. I love hardware. I don't know about you, but I had decided to make a blackboard for the children's play area.
That's a very good idea.
And I thought, I'm going to make a blackboard. So I'm not going to buy a blackboard. I'm going to make it.
Mm-hmm. You can just get paint.
I ordered some blackboard paint.
Did you? Can you just paint that paint there on the wall there?
Paint the hecking wall with the blackboard paint.
Is that what you decided to do?
No, because I didn't want to ruin the wall.
Yes.
I thought I wanted the option of moving the blackboard.
A portable blackboard.
Portable blackboard. So I went out to the hardware emporium and I bought a giant sheet of MDF.
Yes. How big?
Massive, as big as you can get. I got them to shave the edge off, but it was huge. I mean, it was just about big enough for me to be able to drag it along the floor.
You dragged it along. You didn't have it on a little trolley.
Nah, I couldn't find the trolley.
Taller than you?
Yeah, way taller than me.
Really?
I mean, if I laid it lengthways, I could get it just about under my arm. So I was clamping it under my arm instead of dragging it along. But I also had lots of other stuff with me. It was absolutely huge.
What an exciting trip.
Yeah, it was amazing. But when I got out, I had to lean it up against the side of the door because I had to put the rest of my stuff...
The car door?
The exit of the shop.
Right, yes.
So I had to put the rest of my stuff into the car. So I opened the car. I'm on my own, incidentally, so there's no one to help. So I open the boot of the car, I'm putting my stuff in, and I lean the huge sheet of MDF up against next to the sliding doors of the shop. It was a very windy day, though, right? So as I'm walking back from the car to collect my sheet of MDF, the sliding doors of the shop open and a couple exits, a sort of middle-aged couple with their nice Sunday afternoon, shopping in their trolley. A gust of wind catches this enormous heavy sheet of MDF and it starts to topple right towards this woman as she's leaving the shop.
Holy
and she can't see it, and I can see it happening in slow motion. So I instinctively just run towards it and go, "Oh no, watch out!" Too late. It catches the back of her head.
What?
And smacks her shoulder, like scrapes down her shoulder.
No.
Luckily enough, it didn't catch her square on the head. Otherwise, she would have been badly hurt.
Brained.
As it was, I'm sure it was quite painful for her. And it was just horrific. I thought, oh my God, that was my fault. That was Dr. Buckles' fault. So as soon as I saw that she wasn't badly hurt, my next thought was, maybe I'm going to run away now and pretend that it's not my sheet of ridiculously stupidly left MDF there. You know what I mean? It wouldn't have been so stupid to leave it there if it hadn't been a windy day, but boy, it was daft of me to prop it up there. I don't know.
Was she on the floor at this point?
No.
Did she topple to the floor?
She didn't topple, no.
Did she scream?
Exactly. Exactly.
Like that.
Yeah.
Was her husband or partner with her?
Husband was there. He was like, oh my goodness.
Oh my God, darling.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It was, and I went up and I said, are you okay? Are you okay? And she said, yeah, yeah. And, you know.
Bleeding? Was she bleeding?
She wasn't bleeding, thank goodness. She was okay. But it must have really...
Quite hurt,
and a massive shock, yeah. And, you know, they were well within their rights to be pretty furious.
Call the police.
Who the hell has left that there? What complete moron has left that massive, dangerous piece of MDF there? So at this point, I'm thinking, okay, now things are going well for Buckles in one way because I look like a conscientious, caring member of the public who's saying, are you okay? Are you okay?
But they don't know you were responsible for it in the first place.
Exactly. They don't know that I'm the idiot hole that left it there. So I'm thinking, oh man, should I just wait for them to walk away before collecting my MDF and putting it in the car? Or what? In the end, I thought, no, I've got to man up.
So I get the MDF and I walk back to the car, and I'm only a couple of spaces away from where this couple are parked. And luckily they were, you know, a nice couple and didn't want to make a big deal out of it. They could easily have got very angry and made a huge fuss. But I was lucky, and I thought, well, I better apologize. And you know, obviously, as I'm the guy with the MDF, and they could see me loading it into my car, I went up and I said, listen, are you okay? And she said, yes, I'm fine. I said, I'm so sorry. That was my fault. It was stupid to leave that there. I'm really happy that you're all right. But as I was saying it, I immediately started thinking, maybe I shouldn't even admit to this. Because if she then gets, like, back pains or something, she could sue me.
Absolutely.
You know when you're in a traffic accident, however...
Sure, if you're injured in a trip or a fall at work.
Right, but one of the things you're not supposed to do is admit liability. You know, you could say... It's a horrible thing to say to people, but it's a good bit of advice from a legal point of view. You're not supposed to admit that it's your fault. You know, you can check that they're okay.
But you did. You're an honest Buckley's.
Well, I find it very hard to do that, yeah. So I said, listen, I'm really, really sorry. And luckily, she was happy with the apology, and she said, oh, well, it was windy, it's not your fault. But
so what are we looking for from people? Times when...
Talking about times when you've got a large sheet of MDF and it hurts someone.
This is the most specific explanation we've ever done.
No, I'm talking about apologies. Times when it's been hard to apologize, but you have done so. And maybe techniques for apologizing, maybe times that you didn't apologize and you should have done and you wish you had done. We're talking apology stories, right? If it was the
Love
time
it.
Radio hour, we're talking all kinds of apologies.
64046 is the text number. The email is adamandjoe.6music@bbc.co.uk for your responses to this week's Text the Nation.
Right now, here's Sufjan. Is that how you pronounce it? Sufjan Stevens with I Walk. Very nice. That's the Kings of Leon there with Molly's Chambers. Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. How are you doing, listeners? You all right? Now, last week, I very confidently, we were talking about, was it on the podcast we were talking about this or on the actual show?
I don't know what we were talking about.
We were talking about the bearded star of films like The Hangover and The Hangover 2.
Zach Galifianakis.
Right. And I extremely confidently said, no, it's pronounced Galifianakis. And there was a few messages from people saying
that you were Rongo Snodgrass.
Rongoloid. It's pronounced Zach Galifianakis. And I found a guy on YouTube who calls himself Pronunciation Book. And he's American, but he goes through various...
Despite the fact that he's an American and has absolutely no right to be tampering with the language,
goes through and defines for people the correct pronunciation of some commonly mispronounced words. Here he is pronouncing Zach Galifianakis for you.
Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, all right.
Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, okay, I get
Zach Galifianakis.
All right, I get the message. It's Zach Galifianakis. I'll never forget. The thing is that it's spelt Galifianakis, and I think it's because I learned how to spell it.
Mm.
I just felt so pleased and confident with myself.
You're too clever for your own good.
That's the thing.
You're too analytical. That's too right. Much brain power.
Yeah.
Too much respect for letters.
Well, I thought that I would go through a few bits of other pronunciation with you. here's a short list of words for you.
Oh, is this a test?
To deal with. This is a little test for cornballs with this pronunciation test. So the first word, it's another name of a famous film star that Joe has to pronounce. It's the star of Donnie Darko. How would you pronounce that, Joe?
I would pronounce his name Jake Gyllenhaal.
Okay, and let's find the pronunciation.
Oh, but I'm vacillating because it might be Gyllenhaal.
Ah, well, you got to settle on one.
I'd go for the most conservative option. Gyllenhaal.
I would pronounce it Jake Gyllenhaal.
Well, now that I'm seeing it written down, the Jake is very straightforward. G Y L L E N H A A L. So
Gyllenhaal.
This is how I pronounce it because the J, I think, is pronounced. The J is pronounced P like a P.
It's a silent
so,
T.
So, pook, pooke, chen, chen, chal.
Pooke, chen, chal.
Pooke, chen, chen, chal.
Here's the actual pronunciation according to Pronunciation Book on YouTube.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
So I was nearly there.
Nearly
Gyllenhaal,
there.
Gyllenhaal.
Here's a tough one that I only found out recently how to pronounce.
A famous German writer.
I know this.
G-O-E-T-H-E.
Goethe.
Right, let's have the real pronunciation.
Goethe.
Yeah.
Goethe.
Yes, because I've read a lot of Goethe.
Because you love Goethe.
I love Goethe.
You see, I always...
I might read a little bit of Goethe right now. Thanks, I'm ready to continue.
My favourite is Goethe. I think he's a better writer.
Goethe.
Goethe. How about this? A word that means the political, economic, ideological or cultural power exerted by a dominant group over other groups.
Yeah, spelt H-E-G-E-M-O-N-Y.
Mm-hmm.
Hegemony.
You're going for hegemony.
Is that... hegemony.
Well, actually, I think...
Hegemony, it's both are right.
It's a question of where you're from. It's a transatlantic thing. So pronunciation book goes for...
Hegemony. Hegemony. Hegemony.
Hegemony, no.
Puts the accent on the second syllable.
He's doing
there.
It like Hermione from Harry Potter.
Right, and that's another commonly mispronounced one. A lot of people going for Hermione and things like that. Mm. But yeah, I think hegemony is acceptable if you're from the UK. The Americans say hegemony. How about this? A word for an initial or early stage, I-N-C-O-H-A-T-E.
Well, this is a good one because I'm not sure I've ever said this out loud, but I've read it a lot. And in my head, it's... It's, well, I pronounce it phonetically, incohate. I've got this wrong, haven't I?
I don't know. I've always said incohate when incohate. I've said it out loud. How? Let's see what pronunciation book says.
Incoate. Incoate.
No H in there.
Incoate.
Ah, but I like hate.
Exactly. You think it's nice to have a word with hate in it that doesn't mean hate.
Incohate.
Incohate. And finally, a famous German watch manufacturer, T-A-G-H-E-U-E-R.
These watches were very trendy when we were teenagers.
Uh-huh.
I had a big, horrible yellow one.
Did you?
An enormous, horrible yellow one.
And yeah, what about your watch?
And I used to pronounce it Taj Heuer.
Like the Taj Mahal.
Taj Heuer. No, Tag Heuer is what I used to say. Tag Heuer.
Tag Heuer.
What's wrong with that?
That's what I'd go for. Let's see what the real one is.
Tag Heuer. Tag Heuer.
Tag Heuer.
Tag Heuer.
You've got to have that sort of haughty New England accent
Tug.
To get it. Tug Heuer.
Yeah, but Heuer is the key thing. I think the Tug or the Tog is, you know, that maybe that changes whether you're transatlantic or not.
Changes everything.
But Heuer, that's what you're going for. Tug Heuer. I would never have gone for that, like Tom Sawyer.
It's not an important one, though, is it, that one?
Isn't it?
I'm more keen on Jake... Gyllenhaal.
A pack of Gyllenhaal. Isn't that how you pronounce
Jake
it?
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake
Gyllenhaal.
With a silent P.
If you want to challenge Adam and my pronunciation skills, then you can just send us words that we'll attempt to read out. adamandjoe.6music@bbc.co.uk.
And we'll mangle
the hardest ones, I wonder.
Well, you see, this was inspired partly by my mispronunciation of Galifianakis, but also Maddie Cutler's message. She says, "Hi, Cornmeister and Buckstongle, brackets, have I gone too far?" No. On the subject of egg corns and mispronunciation, I have a habit of mispronouncing names of fictional characters. Please see examples below. One, Hermione from Harry Potter has been pronounced in my head Hermione for 14 years. Two, Penelope Pussycat from Looney Tunes, always pronounced as Penelope.
Penelope, that's good.
Yeah, this is hard to spell phonetically, so you just pronounce it the same as envelope. Do you think I have issues? Bye, Z's. Maddie Cutler, kiss, kiss, kiss. No, Maddie, you're pretty normal, I would say. So, yeah, we'd love to hear from anyone else who's got similar sort of problems. Here's DJ Format. This is Separated at Birth. Mm. Yeah, that's DJ Format with Separated at Birth. You're listening to Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. Thanks very much for doing so. I think it's time we had some travelling tales, don't you?
Travelling tales, tales of travelling on the train or an automobile or an aeroplane. I want to know what your travelling tales.
All aboard the Skylark!
Very aggressive jingle. It's a shocking jingle.
It is, yeah.
It's the way it comes in. I mean, there's a sort of static pop, a glitch, and a bang. It's quite hardcore.
It is hardcore. Well, I
just feel
down.
For people listening, maybe they're, you know, having a little stroll.
Well, where
are
all the people interpreting, you know, jingles for a certain jingle, the retro text and anything. Why don't they do like a mellow version?
Why don't they do a mellow version of that one?
Traveling
Tales. Right. If you don't like the Traveller's Tales jingle, it's not a question of not liking it. I mean, of course it's amazing, but if it's unpalatable to you.
Here's a message from Dominic. He says, Adam, because we were talking about, on the podcast last week, we were talking about my jingles being considered too long by some people. He says, Adam, I don't think your jingles are too long at all. In fact, I think the Travelin' Tales jingle is two syllables too short. Oh. When it comes on, I feel I need to add the word entail to the end of the final sentence. I'd appreciate it if you could adjust the jingle accordingly. You don't need to change the way the words scan or anything. Just say entail after you've sung, I want to know what your Travelin' Tales, he says. Well, actually, you've got the, you know, you have made a mistake there, because the last sentence of the Travelin' Tales jingle is a brilliant little bit of wordplay, because it actually says, I want to know what your Travelin' Tales, your travel entails.
Oh.
Yeah?
What your travel entails.
I would like to know what your travel entails.
Yeah, you schooled that listener. What's that?
In your face, Dominic! He says,
Dominic,
unless I...
How humiliating.
Maybe I misheard the line itself, in which case I feel like a Wally. All right, Wally! How you doing, Wally?
Here's a travel entail from Rory in Warwick that I'm going to pronounce Warwick. Mm-hmm. Hello, Dr. Buckfast Tonic and Mr. Cornish Pisky. Saturday afternoon, busy... I like this one because he's written it... Rory's written it in a very pithy manner, lots of full-stop short sentences. Saturday afternoon, busy train, table seat, couple facing me, genders irrelevant, are uninhibitedly frisky. Mm. Snogs, canoodles, hands-up T-shirts, wriggles and murmurs, too much!
Sexy time.
I decide to exercise the power of my will and engage all-purpose upper body twitchy spasms at intervals of approximately 30 seconds.
What?
He starts to do weird twitching to try and freak them out and put them off.
Yeah.
Just upper body spasms like that. I did one. My headphones nearly fell off.
Juggled your keys.
Reaction? The snoggers disengage on spasm number two. And for the remainder of the journey, devote their attention to inoffensive fashion mags. Result? But elation swiftly replaced with sense of guilty unease.
Flipping.
Rory in Warwick.
I mean, that's going quite far to start, you know, faking
but that's
a...
that's good. It's a very good technique. Sometimes,
fit.
Some people say that if you get in a difficult situation in the street, you know, if you're in a situation that looks like it might get ugly with some people who are trying to rob you or something, the best thing to do is to act crazy.
Mm-hmm.
We've discussed this before, probably, you know.
Like Eddie Murphy in Beverly Hills Cop. Does he do that?
I don't know. And then they won't come anywhere near you. It's a similar kind of thing, but this is better, I think. The spasming is more subtle.
I know, I'm thinking Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon. He does that, doesn't he?
He does that all through all nine films.
Out crazies people. Here is one from Richard Doyle. Dear Adam and Joe, although I normally travel normal class, sometimes if I know that I'll be travelling a few weeks in advance, I treat myself to a first class ticket, as they're quite often only £5 more, which I make back by drinking several cups of coffee, stealing a newspaper and eating lots of biscuits. Ha ha! In your face, man! On one occasion, I was sitting in my reclining leather seat with my laptop, and I thought I'd pop some music on as I'd listened to all of your podcasts. It can happen. As I'm not a yob, I got out my headphones so as not to disturb my fellow well-to-do-looking passengers. I plugged my headphones in and decided what to listen to. Feeling mildly rebellious in my first-class surroundings, I thought I'd kick off with a little Rammstein, followed by Ice T's Wrong Noodle to Flip With. It's not what it's actually called. I hit play, closed my eyes, and reclined in my enormous leather seat. My music seemed a bit quiet, so I turned the volume up a bit, but it still sounded a bit wrong. But my headphones weren't of the best quality, so I put it down to that. About halfway through Wrong Noodle to Flip With, I realised that the sound wasn't actually coming out of the headphones at all. It was, to my horror, coming out of the laptop speakers and entertaining my fellow passengers. I hadn't pushed the headphone jack in hard enough, so quickly I jammed it in. My fellow passengers had been nice enough to ignore the yob at the centre of the carriage blasting out some quite offensive tunes, and I spent the rest of the journey red-faced and trying not to make eye contact. As we got close to my destination, we were now... The now quite full train terminated, and I hurriedly packed my stuff up and dashed to the door so I didn't have to face anyone. Now I always double-check my headphones. From Richard Doyle. That's bad, isn't it?
Very bad. Tricky situation. A chap sat opposite me on the tube this week with headphones that literally might as well have just been speakers.
Yeah.
And his music was so loud, and he had a look on his face as if no one could hear this music, and that he was in his cool world, you know, listening to his secret music. But no, we could all hear it perfectly easily. And he looked like a great big idiot hole.
Do you ever let people know when that happens?
No, he became aware because everyone was looking at him, and he turned it down and looked sheepish. Then, a few minutes later, someone else came on the tube, and this is completely tangential. He was a huge man, a very big guy, probably in the military or something, big, 7 foot or something. But he had a backpack on, and it meant he couldn't sit back in his seat.
Right.
So it pushed him so far forward in his seat that he was about a foot away from my face. And he stayed on there for 5 or 6 stops. It was very disconcerting. No, just trying not to look at me.
Yeah.
But he was right in my face.
Right in your face.
Brilliant travelling tales there.
Now, do you remember a couple of weeks ago I had a special platform announcement jingle, or a jingle that could be used before any announcement in the travel system. We'll just play it again to remind you.
Have a word.
Thought it might be a fun thing, you know, like in France they have the SNCF jingle. Anyway, we got a message from an anonymous man. And he says, "Dear Buckles and Scornballs, long-time podcast member, first-time writer, I'm a male man who wants to remain anonymous for reasons that will become clear. I'm a train driver for a company that takes people in and out of London, and I have to do my own announcements. I eagerly await travel entails to see if any of my work colleagues have been recorded doing robot voices or spouting general wiffles and waffles, but no, nothing as yet. I particularly enjoyed your non-sexy ever-word jingle and decided to rise to your challenge of getting train companies to adopt it for announcements. Whilst working on a train into London earlier this week, I played the jingle at the start of my announcement and ended it with a feeble, love you, bye. Anyway, hope you like it. All the best. Anon from Birmingham. From north of Birmingham, but south of Manchester. And here's what he recorded. Listen carefully, listeners. So there was a love you bye at the end, and he did start with the ever-word jingle there. There were a few bing-bongs to disguise the actual destination of the train so as not to make it too clear who the fellow is and get him fired or anything. But nice job! You get some kind of squadron prize for
that. That's amazing. What a daring guy.
I'd like to hear someone playing it on a plane. I mean, you'd really get, you'd really get in trouble then, wouldn't you? Bing-bong, ever-word. Please fasten your seatbelts.
You don't want that kind of thing on a plane.
Do you not?
No. It would undercut your confidence in the crew.
It would a little bit, wouldn't it?
Imagine if you thought that Dr. Puckules was flying the plane.
We're in trouble. Here's the Temptations. This is Cloud 9. Who is the lead vocalist of the Temptations? It's not Levi Stubbs, is it? He was with...
We'll never find it. How do you find information like that out these days?
You have to go into a library and look through all the books and stuff.
How boring.
He's on the computer. Hey, incidentally, thanks very much for some of the top tips that I got after complaining last week of...
Paul Williams.
Was he singing that one?
David Ruffin. Otis Williams.
Oh.
Eddie Kendricks. Melvin Franklin.
Kendricks is the only one that I could possibly have known from there. I was complaining last week that it's very annoying when you... Like, I do a lot of time murder going through documents, importing bits of text into documents and then having to go through and reformat them as I go along because I can't bear to see them all looking different. Top tip I got that's totally transformed my life from Paul Hamley, the podcat. He says, listening to Podmax this week, here Adam has occasional trouble with text imported into Word having different formats all over. In my capacity as Office IT geek, I couldn't help writing in with a tip that Adam may be interested to know. The command paste special and then choosing unformatted text option avoids this annoying problem by not applying any formatting to the source text when pasting. This is a fun tip, isn't it?
What an exciting stinky linky.
Are you getting that, though? Can you see it in your mind, what you have to do?
No.
So you go copy the text, right?
Copy the text. And then when you go to paste the text, you choose instead paste special, and then you will see a dialogue box pop up giving you the option to choose unformatted text. Simply select unformatted text, and you will find the text forming into your document sitting there nice and snugly in the same format as the rest of the document. Thank you very much. From Paul Hamley, Podcat.
This is a good show, though, isn't it? I mean, you got fun things, music, and then you got top computer tips.
I'll tell you what, there's only one thing that can lift this show again.
And that is the sound of David Bowie. Here's a little free play, and, you know, people love to play all the trendy Bowie stuff. But I'll go for the early Bowie any day. And I know this is an amusing song for some people. Not for me. I think it's Wickles. This is The Laughing Gnome.
What goes on in this town is none of your business. None of your business. None of your business.
As long as I'm living here. As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here. What goes on in this town, none of your business. What goes on in this town, none of your business.
As long as I'm
then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Wow, I don't know why all actors don't just give up.
That's Nathan Jackson who put that together. He's a male man. He's 20 years old and he lives in France. And that's what it does with his time. Dear Ads and Jizzle, he says, I'm a big fan of Bronholm. Really like the scene from Taffin, so I thought I'd make a dance mix. Hoping to release the extended mix in time for the Christmas number one. But I don't know if the sounds are annoying enough. Hope you like it.
Well, it could go on for longer. That would become annoying. And then I thought there was an opportunity there to maybe auto-tune the... You know, you could do all sorts of stuff with that, surely.
That's right. I keep feeling I have to give props to the people that turned me on to this thing. Justin Edwards, Dave Armand, and Rufus Jones. He's an actor who turned a lot of people onto it, including Jason Hazley. So thanks, guys. You've really transformed our world.
That's brilliant work by Nathan Jackson there, creating that dance mix.
Yeah, thank you, Nathan.
We had another email as well. Well, let's do this one first. Kissy Sellout, who is a very important, exciting DJ on Radio 1, who in previous shows has let another thing from this programme slip into the mix. Right, what was it that slipped
into the mix? Oh, it was a little bit of G-sticks action.
A little bit of
Wee-sticks. G-sticks.
Now, G-sticks. Taffin has managed to infiltrate Kissy Sellout show. Have a listen to this clip.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Abwar, and right now you're in tune with my mini-mix on Jaguar Skills and his amazing friend, BBC Radio 1.
Yes, that's the extended version as well.
Come on.
That's so good.
It's always good to make it to Radio 1.
That could surely be the... I mean, Nathan's already started work on it, but that has to be the cornerstone of an extraordinary dance hit.
I've got to get... Floor smash. I'm going to have a try at that.
Maybe we could do a Taffin-based Song Wars.
Let's do it, man.
And you're only allowed to use Taffin when actually not allowed to do any vocals.
Yeah.
Other than that sample.
Good idea. What about, can you use samples from elsewhere in the movie? Or other Bronholm samples.
Yeah, Bronholm. You can other Bronholm samples. That's a good idea.
All right.
Let's give ourselves a little bit of time for this.
Can we unveil them at Glastonbury then?
Okay. It's going to take a while to get all the Bronholm samples in.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Let's do it, man.
To plan. Finally, on this section of the programme, here's another email we had from John in Aberdeen.
Why did you get angry?
I was just getting efficient. I felt we were getting efficient there.
Oh.
We'd planned something for the future.
Of that programme.
I called this a section. It was suddenly very officious.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, what's happening in this section of the programme?
Shut up.
Shut up.
John in Aberdeen, he sends an email that says, hey there, Commander Corndog and Brigadier Buckwheat.
What?
Remember during Wimbledon, you guys discussed tennis grunting? I was watching the French Open highlights and thought Taffin might enjoy a set or two of tennis. Here are the results.
Yeah.
Thank you. Quiet, please.
Game Taffin.
It just makes everything better. Thank you very much, John in Aberdeen, for creating that and sending that to us.
Good stuff. Wow. I mean, surely this has got to end with Bronholm on the phone, doesn't it?
It should do, shouldn't it? I've interviewed Bronholm.
Have you?
Yeah, when I was doing my Radio 4 film show stint.
Was he nice or a little frightening?
He was really nice.
Yeah.
I love him. I think he's amazing.
All right, listen, let's put out the feelers now, because you never know who listens to this show.
Bronholm,
someone
what
might
would
know.
We ask him, though?
I don't know. We'd just get him to say the thing. He never would, though, because he's too famous.
No,
he?
He's got a sense of humour.
Does he?
Yeah, he's a very, very underrated comic actor. The Matador springs
Matador's
to mind.
Brilliant.
He's a very, very underrated comic actor.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a very underrated actor, per se.
Sure.
I've got maximum respect.
Why you call me per se?
Because that's your name.
Why are you calling me per se?
Per se Edwards.
My name's Danny Different.
Here's the beautiful Emmy the Great.
Yes, this is Iris. It's just a man having some funky fun in his kitchen, sounds like. Ezra Koenig, I think that is, isn't it? From Vampire Weekend with Warm Heart of Africa, the band that is. No. Warm Heart of Africa is the name of the track. The Very Best is the name of the band, right?
Well yeah. done.
Thanks, man. That was from a couple of years ago. And here's a message right now. Get rid of deal with a few messages that we've had coming in. Incidentally, thank you so much for all your communication with this show. We do read absolutely everything that comes in. But it's just not possible to read it all out, is it? It's just not physically possible.
It would be physically possible, but it would take all the entire six music output.
Yeah. When you were away, myself and Garth were talking about greeting problems, something
yes.
that we've talked about before on the show.
Yes.
Here is a message from Laura. She says, "Hi, Adam and Joe. Just chipping into your greetings technique discussion. Saying goodbye to my cousin-in-law one Christmas, she leaned in for the cheek kiss and feeling a bit tentative and air-kissed rather than going directly for her cheek. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
This backfired massively as the slight suction created by the air kiss pulled her earlobe into my mouth and I ended up nibbling her ear instead of just harmlessly kissing her cheek. So she didn't want to go for the actual kiss on the cheek. She goes for an air kiss, but she's created so much suction with her lips. She sucks her earlobe into her mouth and starts sucking it.
Mm-hmm.
What's
mm-hmm.
that? That's not... No.
I have problems with those air kisses as well.
Do you?
Yeah.
No one does air kisses.
Don't they?
No, it's a joke thing to do.
Well, sometimes
mwah,
you...
Mwah, that's
well,
what ponces do.
Just sort of holding back
no,
a little
No,
bit.
Ponce kiss. It's a ponce kiss.
I tend to smash cheekbones.
Uh-huh.
I just bang the cheekbone against the other person's cheekbone.
Deliberately?
K-dung. No, I don't really know what I'm doing is
right.
the bottom line.
Right.
So I just sort of smash cheekbones.
You know, the upshot of the conversation that inspired the chat that myself and Garth had with this lady, that was a mangled sentence, wasn't it? Anyway, I'll
it
carry
makes
on.
Sense.
Was the lady was absolutely lobbying for just a positive greeting. You know, you decide what your greeting is going to be and you go for it and throw yourself into it 100%. And she said that she would rather have a lip kiss with a stranger than just a sort of lily-livered, not sure if I should do both cheeks
wow.
kind of kiss, you know? I'd be
She's a very forward lady.
She is, yeah. And a lady that...
She should work at the at Six Music Reception.
Right. Would
Wouldn't
you?
She could lip-kiss everyone what I comes see. In the door.
I was wondering if you were lip-kissing the receptionist lady that was down there at the moment.
Maybe I am. What is it to you?
I'm just a little bit jealous. But thank you very much for that, Laura. Thank you for admitting to your earlobe sucking then. There. Let's play the vaccines. This is All in White.
Sounded like Ken Corder there.
Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. Now, we don't have a jingle for Eggcorns because they're an irregular element of the programme.
Yeah, but
they?
We've got some good ones. Thank you to everybody who sent in your Eggcorns. If you're not sure what that is, all will become evident when we start to read some out. There are some pretty funny ones here, I reckons. This is from Alex, a mailman from Tunbridge Wells. Dear Adam and Joe, my friend was so blown away by a Britain's Got Talent illusion that he set his Facebook status praising the deft-defying stunt.
Deft-defying.
Deft-defying. Deft-defying.
Deft-defying.
That stunt is deft-defying.
That's absolutely deft-defying.
So he's combining a deft stunt with a death-defying stunt and coming up with
death-defying,
which is almost better than you know, he's almost improved it.
It defines deftness. That's a good one. Here's one from Fred of Islington and Sweden. He's got a foot in both camps. Hi, Adam and Joe. I was doing a course one day operating a scissor lift a few years ago during the classroom-based part of... What is a scissor lift?
A scissor lift is a sort of platform that goes straight up, isn't it? With a sort of zigzag mechanism, like a concertina mechanism.
Oh, yes, one of them.
Straight up.
Yeah. Oh, they look fun, those.
They are fun.
They look wicked.
I'll get you one. I'll hire you one for your birthday. You can just go up and down on it all day.
Oh, man, that would be so good if I could.
I will do that.
Please, yeah. That would be so nice. Yeah. Fred of Islington, he went on a course to learn how to operate one. Lucky, man, you're so lucky. Every time the instructor gave us an important piece of safety advice, he would point at our pen and paper and tell us to... make a mental note, waiting for us to write it down before continuing. He says, I'm not a scissor lift driver at the moment. So the guy is saying, he's just got the phrase, okay, I'll make a mental note. But what he means is just make a note.
Make a note. He's got the sort of, you know, the brain, the interior life confused with exterior life.
Right.
The tangible confused with the intangible.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. The physical with the metaphysical.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
he should get into some sort of poetry instead of teaching scissor lift operations.
Sure. Make a mental note. And then do you think he's just using biro to scrawl onto his subconscious
mental things? Mm. Here's one from Anonymous. I've recently come across a rather fantastic egg corn via my mother-in-law-to-be. My wedding is 3 weeks away, and the mother-in-law-to-be was describing an outfit she'd seen. I must admit my attention was waning, but when she started describing the finer details, she used the term Del Montes instead of Diamantes. She has since been corrected by my other half, but she will not use the correct term. What lovely Del Montes on that dress.
That's like the ultimate accolade, isn't it? Wow, that looks exactly like a delicious tin of peaches. Mmm.
Nick says, a male person, not sure if this even counts as an egg corn, but my lady partner friend once said one of my favourite things ever. Oh, I'm so tired. I could sleep a horse. What? I'm trying to use that more in day-to-day life. Now, what's going on there?
I could eat a horse and I could...
Or sleep like a log.
Sleep like a log.
I could sleep a horse.
I could eat a log. I could sleep a horse. I mean, that's pretty twisted.
And here's a really good one, finally, from Eleanor, a lady person in York. I thought I'd share this overheard conversation from work today for your occasional eggcorns feature. One colleague was trying to open an iron brew bottle, but she couldn't get the lid off. She joked that this was because she hadn't been drinking her iron brew, so she wasn't getting enough iron to make her strong. Colleague number two commented, oh, it's like one of those bacon and egg situations. Cue
nice.
A quick exit to the coffee lounge to giggle. Bacon and egg situation.
Yeah, sure.
What came first, the bacon or the egg?
The bacon.
Mm.
Get it sizzling, then you put the egg in.
Yes.
Simple as that. Philosophical quandary solved. Here's a free play. This is yours, Joe.
Yeah, this is a little bit of sweet soul music, courtesy of, and how do you say this band's name, Adam?
Well, we used to enjoy saying Tony, Tony, Tony. But I think
it's just Tony, Tony, Tone.
It's just...
This is called Thinking of You. Desire by Anna Calvi. That's it from us. Thank you very much to everybody who's listened and emailed us and texted us. This program will be available as a podcast pretty soon in the next few hours. They're getting faster and faster at turning out that podcast. Maybe
after
not till this evening.
6 p.m. I think it is.
Yeah.
Thank you very much indeed for listening. Here's a quick message actually from Liam Ringwood. Do you remember we were talking about sticking it to the man the other week?
Mm.
People ringing through apples at a cheaper price there to save 20p sometimes to stick it to that man.
Right on.
Liam says, what do you think happens when someone buys something but pretends it's something else? The store computers say it's still there, but someone's waltzed off with it, happy that they've cheated the man out of 20p or some stupid amount like that. Someone has to go looking for it in the warehouse. Maybe it's been mislaid somewhere. If it's fresh fruit, it might start rotting away before anyone notices. You're not cheating the man. You're creating more work and stress for the little guys. Stop stealing things! It doesn't hurt the man. It hurts the honest worker!
Wow, that's chastening.
All right.
He's got a point.
He's got a point, but what are you supposed to do to stick it to the man? Like, get political and, like, go on rallies?
Well, that's the problem. The man surrounding himself with normal people as a kind of a human shield.
Well, you know, you want to do something...
like he's saying...
Just go up to the man and give him a slap.
In the Julies.
In the Julies.
All right.
Coming up soon, of course, the wonderful Liz Kershaw. She is talking about who is the most talented musician to come out of Britain.
Dappy.
Today. And there's going to be a lot of talk about Mr. Bowie as well. So stay tuned for that. She's coming up in a matter of minutes. We'll be with you at the same time next week at 10 a.m. here on BBC Six Music.
Right now we're going to sign off with the Birds, so you want to be a rock and roll star. Take care. I love you. Bye.
Bye.